12 people. Is there anybody here who was part of that sit-in in the audience? Michael? Anybody? Okay, I don't see the other folks. They were all part of that sit-in. About, when was that again? About a month? About 5 weeks ago? 5 weeks ago? Yes. So they, so Nancy Pelosi's staff said, call the police, and Homeland Security came and took them down to the bowels of the new federal building on 7th Street, and they all got ticketed and released and are waiting information when their court appearance is. So anyway, we've been to her office 3 times this year. We, we have 16 of us went to Los Angeles in April when President Obama was having regional White House healthcare meetings, and there was one in Los Angeles, and 16 of us drove down there and joined other about 600 other people who were rallying outside that, arguing for single payer and rallying for single payer. When President Obama's press secretary came here about 3 months ago, we rallied outside his fundraising event in the Marina District. When Senator Baucus came to town to do a fundraiser for the Senate the Senate's campaign committee, we had about 40 people outside this private home here. And what we found out from one person inside that meeting was that because we were outside, it changed the whole tenor inside. Because the way we found out is one person was inside, and so he started blabbering about single payer because the crowd was outside, what's going on? And so we, you know, had that little influence. What other rallies have we had this year? Well, when Obama came to town here about a month ago, we had a couple hundred people. There was like 800 or 1,000 people out. But we had like 200 people outside the hotel where he was speaking with this banner right here. This banner looks a little ragged. It's because it was in a ragged demonstration, okay? And it got on the front page of the Oakland Tribune, and it got on the inside cover of the San Francisco Chronicle. That, and then who? Kathleen Sebelius came to town. We had 200 people out in front of her hotel just days after she said, no, this is not going to be single payer. It's off the table. So we greeted her with a couple hundred people. So this has been a little, we're a somewhat active group. Not to, despite, and we've also been to Sacramento a few times this year with crowds and so forth. Okay, so it looks, I'm sorry?
We've been to Los Angeles.
Yes, we went to L.A.
A very important announcement from the kitchen.
Yes, a very important announcement from the kitchen.
I hope you're enjoying the potluck. If you brought something to the potluck in a container and you want to keep that container, please come get it before the meeting's over. Thank you very much.
There you go. Okay. All right. And thanks to Art Persico and Catherine Burnett for helping to direct traffic and line things up. And then also thanks to Art Persico for doing some press stuff. He got Congressman Massa on 3 radio shows so far today. He was on KPFA this morning at 9 o'clock. He was on KPU at 10:50. And on the 6 o'clock news tonight, he'll be on KPFA again today on some news show, okay?
KCBS.
Oh, and KCBS is here too. We're in the back corner. There we go. Okay, in the back row. Okay, we have KCBS. Tim Ryan from KCBS is here too. So we're getting some good press on this thing also. Okay, so let's get going with Congressman Massa. So Congressman Massa is a freshman legislator from upstate New York. He ran in 2006 and 2008. Not up and down if I'm right here. Okay. And he ran on a single-payer platform in a very moderate district. And he won. And then he set about the business of getting a staff in place. So who did he hire for his chief of staff? A guy named Ron Hinkle. Who knows who Ron is? You shouldn't know this name. He used to run the Medicare system in the province of Alberta, Canada. So at his side, he has answer man. You know, it's like, what are the pratfalls? What, how do you deal with this? What, so it's like, the guy, so Congressman Moss is very serious about this whole situation. He also went to Congress, and he became a co-author of H.R. 676. Okay. And then we saw in Congress all but two of our supporters of H.R. 676 kind of, under pressure from the White House, bend and cave and vote for this the solution that's being presented in the House, H.R. 3962, which says the insurance companies get a whole lock on our health care system here. So he was one of two people who said no, yet to this one. Okay, so the Republicans are targeting him next year. This may be the most contested office in the whole country. The Republicans are targeting him because the composition of his district, he won in a moderate district. And I'll say this, the Democratic leadership probably is not going to be sending a lot of resources his way because he's showing them what it is to have a spine. All right? So so we are so fortunate to have him here today. Rob, do me a favor. Turn that off for a second. And someone told me that somebody's organizing a fundraiser for him tonight at 6 o'clock. And I'll figure out who that person is. Just come and talk to me afterwards. Okay? If you want to help his campaign. Because if the single... Here's the deal next year, okay? If he loses in Rochester, New York, it's, you know, these other more wishy-washy politicians or people who don't have spines are going to say, see what happened to Eric Massa. I don't know. You'd rather have a nice liberal in there than someone who supports single payer firmly. But if he wins, what do we get to say to up to this somebody when we go lobby? Hey, see, be like Eric Massa, right? Okay. So anyway, if you're interested in that afterward thing, I'm sorry. Okay. Right. And I bet I know somebody who can help you if you talk to me afterwards. Okay, so, I've said enough. Eric Massa flew in last night. Come on up, Congressman. It's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Throughout the long course of the last 11 months, many of us in this room have had the opportunity to meet each other. Some of you, to your disadvantage, have had the inopportune opportunity of having to listen to me. And thus, today we are reunited. And it is provincial, I think, that as we talk here today about the issue of our generation, the entire United States Senate is snowbound in their chambers. There is some poetic justice in that vision that none of those senators can get away from each other for the next 72 hours. In fact, I'm told that I was literally on the last aircraft out of Washington. That is so prophetic. You could write a novel with that title. My name is Eric Massa, and I am a highly improbable spokesperson for our issue. 11 years, 7 months, and 14 days ago, I was diagnosed with terminal cancer. I was told I had 4 months to live. Well, they got it wrong. And on the second day of my incumbency, as a member of the United States House of Representatives, I stood on the floor of our great Congress and said that I would not receive and I would reject the Congressional Health Care Benefits Plan as a member of Congress until such time that all Americans have access to the same level of insurance. Now, as you can imagine, when I sit down at a table in the congressional dining room, most of my colleagues move away from me for fear of lightning striking. I said what I meant, and I meant what I said. And when the Progressive Caucus came to me and said, "Will you sign a letter? Will you show solidarity? Will you stand in strength? and refuse to support a health reform bill unless it has a robust public option defined as accessibility by all Americans and cost competitiveness against the for-profit insurance industry. I signed that letter. And when we gave that away and gave up on a robust public option, and then when we gave that away and gave up on any public option, I said what I meant, and I meant what I said, and I voted no on the bill that was put in front of us. Now, that was a very, very difficult vote. But if you are unable to stand on your principles, eventually you will stand for nothing. And today, we have a large consensus in this country that the two fulcrums of failure in America's health delivery industry are an almost total reliance on a for-profit private health insurance model and the forcing of American workers to be beholden to their employers for the delivery of that health insurance. These are the two wheels that have fallen off the bicycle. And yet the health care legislation that I was asked to vote on inculcates into law, chisels into granite, for at least the remainder of my lifetime, those exact problems by mandating that you buy a for-profit private health insurance policy and requiring your employer to deliver it. It's not that we are holding out for the perfect in the face of the good, is that we are demanding something in the face of nothing.
Right.
And I believe very strongly that while I hope and pray that this president succeeds and that our national leadership therefore succeeds as well, that desire for success by the administration forces me to speak out against this. It forces me to stand and say, I'm sorry, you got to know a little bit about me. I'm just a country boy from upstate New York. Someone said, what part of New York? I said, well, the part that's going to get 3 feet of snow tonight. You know, we have a saying on farms, you can't take a pig and paint it black and white and call it a cow. Doesn't work. You're not going to get milk, still get bacon. Folks, you can't take the bill that we passed in Congress and tell anyone it's going to radically reform health insurance in this country. It will not. We will only be more beholden to that which has caused the problem in the first place. I mean, Americans get it. If you like your health insurance company, raise your hand. The only thing in the United States today that is less popular than being a member of Congress is being a health insurance executive. So I actually like having them around because it gives us someplace to go to play off of. But the reality, ladies and gentlemen, is it's not a laughing matter. This is a matter of life and death. Real people will die today. Children with cancer will be denied health insurance. I know. I have been at war with health insurance companies since the day I became a member of Congress because I made a statement in my district. If your health insurance company cuts you off, tosses you out, come see me. The letters and the lines go beyond the horizon. And each and every one of those cases is a phone call from me to some CEO somewhere. Sometimes we're successful. But why is it in the greatest democracy, in the most powerful economy ever created by humankind, that you must go to a politician to see a doctor? Why do we do that? Now, we stand underneath a beautiful, hallowed cathedral. I took a moment today to visit. I had never been in St. Mary's. You cannot help but not be inspired by the power of humanity in the face of such great architecture. And if you are of that faith or any other, then certainly you can agree with me that the moral component of recognizing the fact that health care is a fundamental human right must make you stand up and shout. We cannot go quietly into the night on this issue. Period. Now, my opponents get real riled up because they say I get too passionate about these things. If you're not passionate about saving your constituents' lives, then I'm sorry, you're dead. And there's an old saying, lead, follow, or get out of my way. And that's where we're at today. Now, I'm a pretty unusual Democrat. Really? Because I used to be a Republican. You know, there's an old story. President Bush came and visited my district. You may have seen this in the newspapers. Big motorcade, he stopped on the way to a city called Canandaigua. And they literally pulled up. They had an emergency stop. He got out, and there's a little boy there. And the little boy was selling puppies. And it was a big photo op. And the president asked when he said, well, I think his name was John. John, are these puppies Democratic puppies or are they Republican puppies? And the little boy said, oh, no, sir, they're Republican puppies. Big photo op, everything else. And as it turns out, there was a dedication to the VA about 3 weeks later. And the first lady and the president came back. And now it was a big to-do. They stopped to see the little boy with the puppies again. And with all the cameras standing there, the president said, now, John, are these Democratic puppies or are they Republican puppies? And John, the little seven-year-old, said, well, Mr. President, they're Democratic puppies. Very awkward. And the president said, John, I don't understand. Just 3 weeks ago, you told me they were Republican puppies. What happened? And he said, well, sir, their eyes opened up. So my eyes opened up. But I come from a district where a third of the people who elected me to office were Republicans. And I talked about single-payer health care at every rally, at every house party, at every town hall, because in reality, it is the most business-friendly, profit-generating, corporation-enticing, competitive way to develop health care in the world. It is. So you can embrace this from moral authority. You can embrace this from profit greed mongering. You can embrace this on ethics. I don't care how you embrace it, just frickin' embrace it. I mean, we've got to go forward. I am alive today because of single payer health care. The three largest non-private delivery systems in the United States, active duty military health care, the Veterans Administration, Medicare, Medicaid, are all single-payer health care systems. Yeah. Right. They are all single-payer health care systems. And so when people come to me and they say, Massa, you're a socialist, which I'm not. You want socialist health care, which single-payer is not. I look at them and say, do you know what socialist medicine is? Do you understand that socialist medicine actually has four quantifiable identifiers? One, you don't choose your doctor. Two, your doctor does not choose your hospital. Three, your hospital does not set your standard of care. And four, you have no right of medical redress, no malpractice. By the way, that's the VA. And in the United States of America, medicine practiced by the Veterans Administration is a purely socialist form of medicine. And the same groups that will come to me and excoriate me as being a socialist medical proponent, as being un-American, as not caring about the flag, will demand that I double the VA budget. This is a terribly confusing and complex issue. And by the way, these are men and women of good faith. They're patriots. We have failed to define what single payer is. So let us today resolve not to use that term. All I want is access to Medicare for every American in this country. We all understand what that means. Every American, every single American understands what Medicare is. We have parents, We talk about it. We understand the fact that we, between age 55 and age 62, we pray just to hang on 7 years so we can say, tag, I'm safe, I got something. Right? How many of you know someone, a mature worker in his or her 50s, who was either laid off or early bought out retirement, or who had a promise from a pension funder to cover this or cover that, and that went away, and they wake up in the morning counting the days until they're accessible at age 62 or 65 to Medicare? How terribly ironic. Just make me 7 years older. And yet that's the system. We know what Medicare is, and we know how good it can be, and it can be, and it can be made better. So I talk about access to Medicare for all Americans. Now, I am one of two. Two. And by the way, no one has ever mistaken me for Dennis Kucinich. Ever. Not once has that happened. Much to his pleasure, I might add. I and he are the last two standing. But they say that from good stock comes good crops. And I think that no matter what happens in the Senate, where we are now, in the House, in reconciliation, because remember, there's been many questions. There will be a vote in the Senate before Christmas, probably on Christmas Eve. Probably. And that vote will pass or not pass the Senate legislation, which we know does not expand Medicare, which we know has no public option, which we know is incredibly restrictive with respect to reproductive rights. These are things that we know now. Goodness only knows what we'll find out tomorrow. But so far, this is what, put it this way, when Senator Nelson says, I love it, be very, very worried. And we'll figure out the details. That will then go into a room. The leadership of the House and the leadership of the Senate will pick conferees. They will go into a room where they will try to meld the bills, paragraph by paragraph. But the Senate has said, via their spokesperson, this is very critical, when they got the 60th vote, the deal with Senator Nelson was there will be no substantive changes to the Senate language. What that means is, around the periphery, this period may change, that title may change, but the Senate language is what will come to the House to be voted on, which is exactly why I didn't vote for the first bill, because we needed to have a much stronger pyramid, because we knew it was going to be cut into a rectangle and come back to us. And that's what has happened. But at the end of the day, when it is what it is, the problem will still not be solved. And we will still have to have activists with activist voices. We will still have to have organizations that will stand up for those who are not heard. We will still have to have a grassroots community effort with not just 800, but 8,000, 80,000, 800,000 volunteers who do everything from make donations to write letters to the editor to show up at peaceful protests to let their voices be heard, because the problem will not have been solved. And it will come back to our shoulders. It will come back on us to solve it. This ain't done. This is round one. Not round two or three. It's not a time of pessimism. It is a time of great activism. People said, well, single payer as a movement failed because we didn't get single payer. No, it didn't fail. The whole country is now talking about us. And by the way, we are not some fringe. We're not kooks. We're not crazy. We are real Americans. We are men and women of mental and physical substance who understand what the problem is. Let us not have our voices marginalized by those who say, well, they're on the fringe of left or right. That's not the case. We live in the center of America. We understand by the very reality of how we answer the question, do you like your health insurance company, where the real sentiments of this country lie. And no one knows that more than I. When the New York Times wrote that I was the number one most targeted member of Congress, my mom in California called me and said, son, I'm very proud of you. At least you're number one in something. And there's no doubt that because of my willingness to speak out on this issue, my life as an incumbent and a candidate running for my first re-election will be made much more difficult. Now, this is a issues gathering. I cannot and I do not talk about electioneering. But you can connect those dots. Humana is not humane. They're not. They are a for-profit corporation whose very existence depends on their ability to generate profits, which means they make money when they insure the healthy, and they make more money when they uninsure the ill. It is not an issue of delivering health care. It is an issue of delivering profits to shareholders, period. By its very model. I don't have ill will towards Humana. They do as a profit corporation what profit corporations must do. And that is to screw all of us. I'm sorry, you get sick, you represent a negative impact to their balance sheet. If I was a business person dealing with the purely business decisions, there is only one decision they can make, which is why we must ensure they can no longer make those decisions. It's very clear cut. And by the way, it doesn't mean that our for-profit private health insurance industry needs to be erased off the face of the map. In many countries facing this dilemma, what they have done is taken those for-profit corporations and turned them into the not-for-profit delivery systems. There are ways of doing this. That's how they did it in Switzerland, which is arguably the best healthcare system in the world. It is a highly regulated industry. Imagine there's many of us in this room old enough to remember things called utilities. Remember that? Back when the community held in trust the ability to deliver things like electrical, power, water. Remember that? Until we privatized them all and sold them off to foreign for-profit corporations. It used to be there was a board of commissioners who would say, we all need water. It's a basic human need. We're going to highly regulate this. We're going to generate the profits necessary to reconstitute the new water pipes when we got to build them. But it's going to be very carefully controlled. And single-payer healthcare can follow that model. It absolutely can. So when I sit down across the table from so many for-profit corporate executives, I present that to them. I'm not here to destroy you. I'm here to give you a position in the world that will allow you to actually do what you say you do. And that's deliver healthcare to the people who are part of your organization. And my voice will not be still. I will not be quiet. I will not be diplomatic. I won't. And I know it may in fact cost me my reelection. I go into this with my eyes wide open. I get it. But I got 635,000 people in my congressional district who are depending on me to do what I know is the right thing to do. And my voice in Congress will continue to be heard as long as my constituents, with your help, have the ability to send me back. We have a lot of work to do. And every day I wake up more optimistic than the night that I went to bed the day before. I guarantee you, it's what gives me power. There's nothing like being in a room, by the way, where I'm the only guy wearing a suit. You know you're not in Washington anymore. It's wonderful. It really is. It's quite refreshing. I've taken up too much of your time today. Let me just close with an observation. I was asked to go to Philadelphia some 6 weeks ago. And in Philadelphia, I was given an honor of being given the Paul Wellstone Congressional Leadership Award. And I was the first freshman ever so honored. The last individual who received it was Senator Kennedy. So I was following in a lion footsteps. And that infused into me a terrible responsibility to pick up the torch that had been started a generation prior to me and to carry it. And we all know in the dark of night, when you carry a torch, you become not only a leader, but a target. I watch organizations like the California Nurses Association, which you know is very, very much right now involved in merging and defining and getting stronger. And I cast my lot with great leaders like Donna Smith, who is a wonderful friend of mine and someone who, like I, has faced terrible health challenges and risen from that to a position of community and grassroots leadership. And I commend organizations of that nature and this and others. But I deliver unto you a call for action. If it is to be done, that a voice will be heard. That voice will only be heard if you put that voice somewhere where people can listen. It is not the power, or as was said before when I was introduced, the strength of my spine. That's not it. I represent you. There's 200 people in this room. There's 200 spines in this room that are theoretically a lot stronger than mine. I have no fear of getting out in front. Put me on that poker and stick me in the hot coals. Got no problem with that. You know, I've had many leaders in the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party do their best to intimidate me into silence or agreement or acquiescence. And I have said to many of them, you forget. I had a whole group of doctors tell me I was supposed to be dead. Exactly what are you going to do? Exactly what are you going to say to me? After a 24-year military career in combat zones of operations from Bosnia to Beirut to the hot spots of the globe, exactly what are you going to do to me? I am here to represent the aspirations and the hopes and dreams of those of us who believe that it is a fundamental human right to be able to wake up in the greatest country created by humankind and not have to cry because your child cannot go to the doctor. That's the values that I represent. They're the values that you share. And we will get there. Yeah. We will. We will. So, we got our work cut out for us. I'd like to thank all of you for allowing me to be here today. Literally, it gave me a great reason to get the hell out of Washington, D.C. If I hadn't, I'd be snowed in with the United States Senate, and that certainly would be a punishment of which even I am not deserving. Even I. I will be back. I will see you in your activism wherever you invite me. I thank those who prepared a beautiful table for us today. By the way, I would rather come here on paper plates eating potluck than go to Kate Street and eat steak any day of the week. Believe me. Ladies and gentlemen, good health to you all. God bless in this wonderful holiday season, and never, ever give up. Go get them. Thank you.
Okay. Okay.